Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Grizzly. At Grizzly, we believe charging your electric vehicle should be simple, reliable, and affordable. That's why we design, engineer, and build our chargers in Canada, ensuring top-tier quality and performance. Powered by United Chargers, every Grizzly model is crafted in-house, built to withstand extreme conditions, and tested for reliability. Recognized by leading publications for its performance and value, Grizzly delivers both durability and intelligence with heavy-duty aluminum enclosures, premium output cables, and smart charging features like scheduling, usage tracking, and OCPP compatibility with multiple charging apps. Grizzly. Simple. Reliable. Affordable. Built for every climate, every EV, everywhere you go. Visit grizzly.com to learn more.
Hello, and on today's show, we're talking about the Volvo EX90 getting a big upgrade, Porsche's product plan pivot, and Tello's 20 million for their tiny, tinsy truck, and of course, much, much more. Welcome to the Batteries Included podcast for Friday, September 26th, episode 107. I'm Martin Lee from the EV News Daily podcast. Today, he's back in the studio, Mr. Tom Mulogany, senior editor at Inside EVs and host of the YouTube channel State of Charge. Dominic Yoni is on screen as well, a longtime EV journalist and host of the YouTube channel Drive Electric with Dominic, and continuing our run of fantastic guests following last week, Patrick and Liv are back from the Electric Duo YouTube channel. Guys, great to have you back, and thank you. It's early where you are. We always appreciate it.
Good morning. We love coming on, even if it means setting the alarm a little early.
Well, thank you so much. Last time you joined us, you were changing over from Mach-E Vlog to the Electric Duo. How's that gone? Big rebrand.
I think it's been great. Like, we were, you know, when you make changes to your YouTube channel, you always worry that all of a sudden your subscribers are just going to abandon you and all of that other stuff. But it's been going great, and it feels a lot better. Like, I was just telling somebody, we went to Electrify Expo San Francisco, and it's just nice when you approach somebody like Lucid and like, hey, we'd love to check out the Gravity. You're not going like, yes, we're the Mach-E Vlog and we want to check out the Gravity. You're like, we're the Electric Duo. And they're like, you can see like a difference in the response just by saying that versus Mach-E Vlog.
Yeah. Brilliant news. Well, you've been so busy. Is this, how full time is this for you? Cause you've been so busy. How do you squeeze this into a busy life?
I might be disappearing to go to work.
Okay, that's fine. Moment,
but here we have the full-time guy.
Yeah. You know, for people that don't know, like, I actually did a video on this earlier in the year. I was a federal employee working full-time and fitting this in. I'm still actively in the job market, technically, but I've been sort of like, you know, if this could actually take off, this could be full-time for me. And unfortunately, like, we're getting to that do or die point where I'm doing it full time, but I really need to start looking for a job because it's not paying full time. So it's been an interesting couple of weeks, this past couple of weeks, as I get closer to that deadline. It's been very stressful, but at the same time, I love being able to pretend that I'm doing it full time. And then hopefully, you know, who knows, magic numbers, you know, I'll wake up tomorrow and we have 100,000 subscribers and sponsors emailing us, and I'm like, cool, we're good.
Well, you guys know, like, we love doing this stuff together with Electric Duo, and this stuff is so fun and interesting. We love being involved in all the new EVs, so it's hard not to try juggle it.
Even if I go back to work full time, we'll continue to do this and just not sleep.
I know the feeling. So I did the same thing. I had a career for forever, and then just made that jump, and it's really sketchy at the beginning, but it's it's working out okay. So, yeah, it's just that the regular paycheck's really nice when someone else is paying the bills. But anyway, as the electric duo, you've been so busy, though. You were at the IAA show with, well, just about everybody else. We saw Kyle over there as well. And you put up a video about this new CATL battery. I don't think it got much coverage outside of just the show coverage, but really interesting kind of two batteries, actually. Is it called Shenxing Pro? So LFP chemistry and also like super long life, really long range. Judging by what they were saying, kind of one's optimized for long life, one for high energy density. What did you make? So obviously it's not coming to the US, I think, in any kind of short or medium term, but you know, Ford are licensing CATL's technology if the stars align and that all goes ahead. So you know, what did you make of these new batteries and what it could do for the EVs we drive?
You know, they were very specific. Like, this is designed for the European market. It's going to be built in Europe. I think they were trying to solidify their place as a leader in the European market. But we sort of asked, we're like, hey, what about the Ford plant that's being built in Michigan? Could that be building like this battery or one of these other ones? They didn't want to get into that. And necessarily, you know, I don't see that as them being secretive. That's just how PR is they're like, we're talking about today. We're talking about Europe. We're talking about the Shenxing Pro. But yeah, I thought it was really impressive. And like one of the things that they were really, really big on is no propagation 3.0.
Yeah, I thought it was honestly really comforting. Like, I didn't know some of this battery technology until we went there. And like, I didn't know that they were in 1 in 3 electric vehicles that are out there, you know? I didn't know they were the largest battery company, but to know what they're doing to sort of prevent thermal runaway or incidents, both on a cellular level and on like the battery, you know, the composition level, which is way over my head. But like, it was very cool to see like in depth what they're doing about this and that they're like, you know, one of the forerunners of this.
And the no propagation 3.0, it was sort of like, it's one of those things is a, you know, we're all like EV nerds. We're like, battery fires are extremely rare. Let's not focus on that. Gas cars have fires way more often. But the reason battery fires make the news is because they, you know, they'll burn for 2 hours and it takes like thousands and thousands of gallons of fuel to put them out, fuel, water. But they were saying with no propagation 3.0, you could literally have a thermal runaway event in one of the cells in a battery pack. And they're saying no fire, no smoke. And I like, I, this is like one of the keys is that the battery can stay, or the car can stay fully energized for like up to an hour. So like if you hit something in the road, like we just saw bearded Tesla guy, they hit something in the road. They didn't have battery damage, but like in an instance like that, if it hits the battery, the whole idea is like those cells would shut down. The car could stay at, you know, 99.9% powered. You can drive up to an hour, you know, drive 20 miles, get to the nearest service station and go like, hey, I got these flashing warning lights. And they're like, oh yeah, your battery's damaged and you had a thermal runaway event on the one cell, but it was contained. We just got to replace your battery. but you don't have the big fire that makes the news across the nation that there is a fire.
And your whole car isn't destroyed.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. And your life and all that. Yeah.
Wow.
But the other stuff is, you know, you mentioned they have one that's focused on like fast charging as well, which the numbers that they're talking about for an LFP battery were really impressive. And this is one of the reasons why I was interested is like, I'm thinking like, Ford must know what they've been developing, but they the one battery is like it peaks at 12C and then average about 4C charge rate, which I'm like, that's pretty darn good for LFP. Oh,
okay.
Yeah.
So I was looking at those numbers, right? So a lot of battery makers in China have been coming up with, you know, 10C, 12C, but you know, a 12C would mean like a 5 minute charge. As like, that's the ultimate goal. That's what we want. 5 minute charge, 12C, like true 12C. But it's not, this is now they're saying peak 12C.
And yeah.
This is not really how you measure C rates. You know, it's averaged over the time. You don't, there's no peaks. But apparently there is in marketing.
There's always, you know, what can we make it sound the best in marketing? But yeah, because I was like, if it's 12C and you're talking about 20 minutes, that's not 12C. And they're like, oh, yeah, it's 4C average. I was like, okay, yeah. That's impressive. And I think that's
great.
That's insanely fast. They're saying 10 to 80 in 10 minutes for the fast charging version of this, which is great. You know, that's like almost double the Hyundai Ioniq family, which is kind of like the benchmark for, you know, the lower price consumer, you know, available models.
Yeah. I mean, I'm looking at the timer now. We've been live on the live stream for 9 minutes, 53 seconds. And the time it's taken us to do the intro before we get to the news, you were charged, right? That's it. So 10-minute charging is ridiculous, okay? In context, like a 15-minute charge. I mean, Tom, we've said this before that 15 minutes goes by so quickly. Like a 4C battery is fine.
Oh, 4C is insane. Just to put that into perspective, I don't know if I know a lot of our viewers here are sophisticated EV followers, but most people have no idea what C rate means, you know, and just to put this into perspective, there's no EVs that we can buy today here in the US that have a 4C rate. There's none that, you know, a full 4C. That would mean, you know, you could fully charge your pack in, you know, 15 minutes, you know, from 0 to 100% of the pack, you know, in 15, that's just not possible. You know, when I look and do my charge analysis, you know, when I'm looking at like 2C, it's like, this is great. You know, it's charging at 2C for this period of the, from 10 to 80 or whatever, you know, there's vehicles that do better than 2C obviously, but you know, what we're getting into now, what I'm getting at is, we're starting to really make huge advances in charging speeds, where we had incremental advances over the last 10, 12 years or so of electric vehicles out there. But now we're starting to see packs that can accept an extraordinary amount of power in such a short period of time. You know, and that's amazing. What we still don't know 100%, not to throw cold water on it, is what does this do to the longevity of the packs? Yeah. We can have Cadel tell us all they want. Oh no, this is going to be great. You know, at 5 years and 120,000 miles, you'll still be at 90% of your capacity. That's great. You could say that all you want. I want to see how these packs last longevity, charging at these ridiculously high rates. You know, and not saying that they won't hold up, but it's just that is such an extreme amount of power getting pumped into these cells. You know, thermal management has to be working tremendously well to keep everything cool enough where, you know, we don't have degradation, thermal plating, stuff like that. So let's see, but it's good. It's exciting to see that we're getting these vehicles that can charge so quickly. That's nuts.
We should ask Patrick and Liv your top three. Is there a top three favorite vehicles, even just your favorite vehicle that you saw at the show? Because I think the show opened even before the media days with the BMW iX3, enormous range, whole new way of them making vehicles. What were your faves?
I definitely have more than three, but
we may overlap. But we're being put on the spot, but iX3 is probably one of my top ones, and it's like the specs of it, the size of it, being close to the Mach-E. I'm like, ooh, that's hard to say no to, and I love the design language. I know it's controversial, but I love that.
I want to know what everyone thinks about the beaver teeth in the comments. The big ones or the little ones?
Yeah. I oddly enough, like one of my favorites is the Ford Puma, but I've always loved the Ford Puma styling and the size of it. So, and I got to drive that, so I thought that was really cool.
So cute.
I think a Ford Puma Rally, and of course the electric side of it would be the best. And then, like anything from Avatar, like we were not familiar with the Avatar brand, but they look sexy. Like the car, like all of them look like really, really nice. We didn't focus a lot of attention on them because, to be honest, we didn't find out we were going to Munich until like a week before. And we, of course, you know, we have life and trying to figure out other things. And we were trying to research what we needed to know to be on the ground there. And then we were completely overwhelmed and blown away. And we sort of took it as like, we're preparing to go like to LA Auto Show. This thing, the European auto shows are just massive. Munich Auto Show is just huge. so many cars and then so many brands, and not only the brands, but like the models that we don't get over here, like Mercedes and their shooting brake, which that would be my fourth, but I'll let Liv do her three.
I'm team small beaver teeth too, by the way. So yay. I have some weird ones. The Ford Puma, definitely. I'm so jealous that we don't get that, but the Renault R5, super cute little SUV. The materials on the inside were insane, and it's so quirky. Like, I've never seen Renault in person, and so like getting to feel the vibe of the brands that like normally you'd probably like, Martin's just used to seeing them driving around like whatever, and we were like, oh, you know, screaming excited. Okay, so the Renault R5 has a baguette holder.
Yeah.
It's like a 345 pound euro baguette holder. And I just think that's so quirky and so indicative of what the brand vibe must be. And like the inside was just way quirkier than I thought it was going to be. We saw the Microlino in person. Ridiculous. Both of us fit in actually comfortably.
Together. Not
together.
Like,
yeah.
At the same time.
Is it a three-wheeler?
No, that's four.
Is it four-wheeler? Yeah. Oh, is it?
The track of the narrow wheels is quite a narrow track. So, it's a four-wheel vehicle. Yeah, that's been kicking around for a long time. That project's been a long time coming. Did you see the hot version of the Renault 5, the Alpine A290?
Yeah.
Really nice. I like it. So nice. It's very expensive, but I mean, we've got so many vehicles because of Renault, Nissan, kind of Mitsubishi Alliance, not really what it used to be, but they still work together. So we've got so many vehicles over here that you don't have, even from Renault Scenics and stuff. And Stellantis as well have all those cars you would have seen. And obviously when I talk to the US audience that mainly watch this podcast and listen to it, you know, you look at what Jeep are doing and you think, well, Stellantis is in the toilet. They've made some bad decisions with combustion, relationship with dealers in the US. In Europe, I'm not saying they're firing in all cylinders, wrong phrase for an EV podcast, but it's so different. We've got so many small Stellantis cars from like 20,000 to 30,000. The Citroëns are really, really good, and you got the DS, which are the nice versions of Citroëns, and so many vehicles like that you don't get. So I forget that sometimes. I'm really glad you got to see them.
Oh man, and I do have to give a shout out for one that we are going to get, though, the Kia EV3. Like, Kia had some bangers out there. They had the EV3, EV4, EV5, and the PV5, which, if anyone doesn't know, it's based on their platform beyond vehicle, like modular platform. You can get a wheelchair ramp, like, on base. Obviously, we're not getting this in America. So bummed. But, like, even Kia by themselves had all these, like, I would consider them smaller offerings. And we're going to get the EV3. So, just...
Supposedly, yes, no.
Hopefully, like, probably.
I was looking last night because Dominique and I were prepping for the show, and it was like EV3, yes, but then you saw it was like maybe not, and then I think everything is wait and see.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I was saying that I don't think it's going to become, because that's a low margin car. Like, the cheaper the car is, the less margin there is, the less money there is to make on it, and with tariffs, if it's not made here. I don't know if they want to use a small car as a loss leader. It's not like a halo car. We're getting the EV4, but only the sedan version, though, right?
Yeah. Yeah. The EV4, though, it did have like something that I know a lot of people, you know, we're talking about like some of these features that the Chinese cars have. They're like a little quirky and fun, but it had like your infotainment could be themed. So they had like the Marvel characters while we were sitting in it. And they're like, when it comes to the US, you can pick like your favorite NBA team, which I'm like, it's cheesy, but it's like, these are the type of things that we've heard about in some of the Chinese cars, like just fun, quirky stuff that I think is going to make it appealing to people of like, oh, cool. That's an extra added feature. I don't care less, like turn off everything, but it's fine.
I want a baguette holder. That's all. I
know. That's all you need. All you need in life. You got a car with a baguette holder, you've made it. Kia EV3 has been my absolute family pick. It's the new Volkswagen Golf. So if someone says, what should I buy? For a long time, you say, well, look at Tesla because they've got it so sorted. But at the moment, if someone just wants a do-everything car, Kia EV3 is not too big, not too small, not too expensive. It's got the two battery sizes, which they like to do with their models. Get the battery that you need to carry around with you. If it's a city car, don't go the big battery, but look for the finance deals as well. And that price around 30,000, you know, plus or minus on spec and stuff like that, it really is if you have one car in your driveway, or at least a family car, another way of getting around, whether that's an e-bike or whatever, a second car, that Kia EV3 is such a good pick. And I see so many of them around here now as well. They look great. So glad you got to see. Like, glad you got to see that.
And we did get to drive it, and that's something that it's sort of like going back to, you know, why these cars are so good for Europe is like driving in Munich with the different size cars, because we test drove like four or five cars, but it was like EV3 was like perfect size, you know. And we were following at one point like one of the bigger SUVs that somebody was test driving, and you could see like around every corner they're like, oh no, this is tight, and we're like,
people, obstacles, roads. Yeah,
absolutely. And I'm glad you like the Ford Puma Gen E. So that was it's ridiculously efficient. First of all, it's 5-point-something miles per kilowatt hour. It's has been sitting at around 30 grand, which is too expensive, because there's cars at 20 grand here that are comparable, sort of, not exactly the same, but you can get Vauxhall Fronteras. The Renault 5, which you love, is low 20s. Renault EC3, BID Dolphin Surf is a segment lower, but Hyundai Insta, probably a segment lower than the Puma, but they're all 10 grand less. And then there's a UK government grant now, £4,000, plus Ford have realized it's not a 30K car. And so you can have that for 24 now. And I think the Puma Gen E at 24 is a really compelling buy. It wasn't when it was more expensive, because it's when it's 30, go buy a one-year-old Tesla Model 3 and you'll get a much bigger car and you get a much better EV. But now at 24 for a brand new Ford Puma, that's a really good car. There's a gap, because the Puma's 24 and the Explorer, which is not the Explorer that you think is, my US audience, is 40. So for what is the mainstream brand Ford that we all love for making mainstream cars, they got this huge gap in their EV world. Nothing under 25 and nothing until 40. So they need a Focus. They need either a Ford Focus, or they need something around 30, like a Kia EV3 competitor. I'm glad you like the Gen E. Why don't these cars come to the US? I know there's obviously reasons, but it's a great car.
You guys have such great options. The fact that you're talking about this many cars and that price range at all, obviously, if we're putting that in dollars, is so awesome. I'm envious. I want us to have that options as consumers. And incidentally, we did actually drive the BYD Dolphin Wave Surf.
Yeah.
Surf. Yeah. Surf. And it's actually, like, for what is a more budget vehicle, it was great. And I love that the screen can rotate, like, while you're driving. What? That's just so quirky and cool.
Yeah,
so
that's cool. That's a 17,000-pound vehicle, 30-kilowatt-hour pack. So it's a city car, like the Dacia Spring. Yeah. But the Dacia Spring and the Leapmotor T03, they're now 12,000 with the money off and whatnot. That's a 12,000-pound car. And that's, so when I talk about prices, of course, I'm talking about, that's the out-the-door price. We don't have any state or regional taxes. We have VAT, but you're not allowed to advertise anything without VAT. So, and you don't need to know that anyway, unless you're a business and you're claiming back the VAT. So if ever I talk about a price, it's the price you pay and there's nothing more. And so that's $15,000. So, you know, for a brand new small city car, safe, reliable transport as a second or third car, maybe your kids are like 17, 18 learning to drive. We got a lot of options. So that's cool.
Mark, before we jump on to the next topic, Dom has a chart I want to pull up really quick, because we were talking about C-rates before, and then we were talking in the comment section about it. I was going back and forth. I prepared this chart here. This is a C-rate curve for two of the best charging electric vehicles we get here in the U.S., the Lucid Gravity and the Porsche Taycan. Now, this was a Taycan 4 Cross Turismo, but it doesn't matter what model it is. The battery charge is the same. And this is the C rates that I put for three charging sessions that I did. One on a 350-kilowatt EVgo station, the other one that Kyle did on a 400-kilowatt charge point station, and then the Porsche Taycan on a 350-kilowatt EVgo station. It says 325-kilowatt on the bottom, because I think that station was slightly derated to 325-kilowatt when I did the charging session, but that wouldn't matter because the Taycan can't go up over that anyway. But you can see there the C rate during the full charging session. I mean, both of these vehicles are monsters. They're the best charging electric vehicles you can get in the U.S., the Taycan and the Lucid Gravity, by far. Nothing's even close to this. You know, I know we talk about some of Hyundai's vehicles that charge to, you know, 80% and, you know, 20 minutes or so, 18 minutes, but the batteries are so much smaller than these that, you know, the C-rate really, when you put it on paper, it doesn't have a comparable C-rate to this. And also they take a longer time after 80. After 80%, while the charging rate does drop, both these vehicles still do pretty well. So, you know, you could see there, we're up at around 3 at the best for the Lucid Gravity and the Porsche Taycan, right up around 3 C, you know, and the Gravity only holds it till about 30%. The Taycan, you know, we should almost call the Porsche Taycan, it's not a charging curve, it's a charging line, because you plug in with Porsche vehicles, does it with the other vehicles too, and it just boom, straight to like, you know, almost 70% before it starts going down. And yeah, Anthony C said these curves make me cry on my Mustang Mach-E. The Mach-E doesn't charge terribly, but I mean, this, we're looking at the best charging electric vehicles we can get here in the U.S. And now when Liv and Patrick were talking about, you know, 4C and 12C, just think about that, you know, compared to like this chart here and how much that's like in the next stratosphere of charging. So I just thought having the visual might help, you know, realize that what we're talking about isn't little incremental improvements. It's a totally different ball game when we're talking over 4C. You know, my chart doesn't even go over 4C.
Yeah, it's the Zeekr. What is it, Dom? We talked about it this week. Zeekr 7X.
Zeekr 7X golden battery.
Yeah, 12C. Peak rate. And that's 12. No, over 1,000 kilowatts. I think it peaks at 1,100 kilowatts or something. BYD announced at the Munich show that Liv and Patrick are out. They're bringing their megawatt charging to Europe next year in 2026, but they're developing it with a single cable. So they're going to put that 1,000 kilowatts through CCS2 connector on the end, and not using at the minute. In China, they have the dual gun method. So you've got to park it back, it's on either side, the flanks of the vehicle, and you've got to put two charges into it. But they're doing it with one cable in Europe, which is crazy. And that's BYD. So it's happening. There's a lot in China that is around 1,000 kilowatts, just above, just below, for passenger cars, for light passenger cars. It's crazy. As Tom says, like, you know, come back in 5 years' time when we talk about the batteries. Who knows if those companies will be here? I think they're thinking, like, let's survive. Even NIO. One of the big, like BYD, NIO, Leap Motor just made 1 million cars. The big ones, XPeng and stuff. Even NIO don't make money yet. So NIO's job number one is let's not go bust. And that's NIO's huge.
Yeah. They just opened up a new factory in China that just went online. And so that's good news for them because they need to get the volumes happening to get the, you know, to get the margins to make the money actually to get into the
need customers though.
Yeah. You need, if you're not around in 5 years time, the battery can be absolutely kaput. And you know, so at the minute they're just putting stuff out there to get people to buy. It's brutal in China.
And I just want to pull up this one comment from No Penguin, No Mayo. I think he said, I think he's saying, is the C here referred to as the same C in the latest battery tech Kyle discussed on his dad's channel, 12C? Yes, there's really only one C and C rate that we talk about when it comes to batteries. There isn't a different metric that we're talking about. So, yeah, I don't know what Kyle was talking about with that with 12C. I guess he must have been referring to some of the new batteries.
It was the same battery, the Shenzhen.
Well, I didn't see that video that Kyle was talking about. I assume that is the battery he was talking about. But, you know, that's not something that we here in the U.S. get or will get anytime soon.
Yeah.
Right.
And in terms of stuff that we don't get, though, we don't get Rivians. Yep. We've just started to get Lucids, not right-hand drive. And they probably won't make a right-hand drive Air or Gravity. They'll probably do right-hand drive in the next 50K car, according to the interim CEO. But you do get other things. Tello is one of those brands that you may get that we may not. Well, you may never get it because it's not even a thing yet. They've just raised another 20 million. Tello Trucks is the tiny, teensy-weensy truck that's got a big bed. And this is, Dominic, you've been to see them. at the product reveal. So many car companies had big promises, and so many have gone bust already. They've also been at Electrify Expo and raised another 20 million, which, God, I hate to say it. I mean, it's a lot of money, but that is just a drop in the ocean to getting a car company up and out there. Dom, you've actually been to see them.
Yes.
What do you think Tello need to do to get a vehicle out there? Because they're not going to sell a ton of these. It's quirky. It's really small. It's got a big bed. And you were impressed, weren't you?
Yeah, I think what they, I don't know. I mean, I'm wondering, here we're living, Patrick has to say about it. I think mostly they need money, and they've, you know, just done that with, they just had this $20 million raise, right? I don't know, did you get a chance to talk to them about that, you guys?
No, this was just before that.
We didn't know that funding was coming for them, but you can tell they're a startup. The truck is impressive. The thing that impressed me about Tello was like, and we'll just go ahead and say, like, we are like 10 miles from Aptera, and they have like this huge building. I wouldn't say fancy offices, but it's like decent offices, but like a huge building where they're like, we're going to do manufacturing here. And they've been, you know, since we moved out here for like 2.5 years, it's like this very nice facility. Tello, like when I got the address and we were going to go visit, I was like looking at it on the map. I'm like, man, it looks like a sort of not a great area. And it isn't. And it's like in this little warehouse thing, and it's like everybody's working. The truck is right there, and then right next to them is like where the engineers are. So it's sort of like it feels like Silicon Valley from, you know, late 90s, early 2000s, where you have like people that are like trying to change the world, working long hours. They're ordering in lunch for everybody because it's like, let's just feed people and have them keep working and stuff. And it seems like they are really sort of like all in on this and not going like, hey, we got 20 million, let's move to a big office. Now, if they do, I'll take everything back. But it seems like they have that mentality of like, money's going to be hard to come by, but we want to change the world. And the truck itself is impressive. That first scene was like us launching on the little street next to them. And it, like, not only did it burn rubber, but it burned rubber for a long way. But I think what's more impressive, Liv, in her other role, she reviews gas cars and reviewed a Tacoma. You want to talk?
I was like, let's try a couple gas cars just so we're aware of what else is out there. And it's really hard not to look at them as worse. So I reviewed a Tacoma, and I think the article went a little, I write for A Girl's Guide to Cars. So I think the article actually went a little viral because I couldn't get my prosthesis in the backseat. If you don't know, I have a right leg prosthesis, so it's hard to bend. So the Tacoma has these big seats, everything about it is honking, and I couldn't fit in the back. But then on the Tello, I could actually get my leg in the back, which I was very surprised about. Like, the whole experience of playing with Tello was a little bit of disbelief and incredulity. Like, I'm like, I just still don't understand quite how they're doing the engineering, but it's actually spacious. Like, on the inside and the rear and front, it does not feel cramped. I'd say it feels more spacious than the BYD Dolphin.
Oh, yeah. I think they say it actually has more interior room than the Tacoma. And the other thing that impressed me, and it's like, they... we actually just did this video, and somebody in the comments are like, I had a reservation for a Cybertruck, but with the price of the Cybertruck and then seeing the Tello, they canceled that because they're like, when I wanted a revolutionary truck, this is more it of what they are looking for. It's like such a small footprint, but such spacious size. The other thing that impressed me was like everything, you see a lot of other manufacturers, especially like the Fords and the Chevys. And you can go like, oh, that's the blinker from the Escape, and that's this. And it's like everything's put together with parts bins. And of course they're coming at it from scratch, but it's like a lot of the design elements, that like pill looking shape that they use, it's like it's inside, it's on the doors, it's on the flares that they're using. So it's like it's a really good design language that's carried throughout. Like everything is put together. It's not just like, hey, let's just make a go-kart on four wheels and make it small with a decent sized bed. They really thought of a lot of good things.
But they also stated that they were sort of spending their energy and intellect where it was best spent. So like their multimedia system is some, you know, provided. It's a, you know, a box, whatever, like white label multimedia system. They're not sort of investing in that. They're investing in the actual design of the vehicle, which I think obviously they're succeeding at. Like there's a lot here. And I really do want them to succeed.
With their ADAS, we were like, well, you know, everybody always is like, what type of ADAS is it going to have? And he's just like, we're not even worried about that, because we're trying to get to market. And by the time we get to market, everything's going to be so different than now. So we have the capability to plug that in, but we don't want to spend the time and resources on it now when in 2 years or whatever, it's going to be completely different again.
Yeah. If it's small and dirty and it's like a Skunk Works team, I'm all over that, because that's what you want. What you don't want is a situation where Arrival went with, what was that, 12 or 15 billion, it's either dollars or pounds, was their peak market value, and they couldn't make it work. They had plans to change the world and to build micro factories everywhere. And I can't imagine the amount of money that was available. If you're an engineer, or, you know, they had a big base here in the UK working at Arrival, it must have been like have whatever you want. The world's your oyster. And that didn't work out. So I think that's one of the biggest examples of just like capital destruction in the EV world, because how did they mess that up with so much money? So good luck to this team. I really hope that like this and the Slate just get to market and find people that love it, because like that's, as you say, Silicon Valley in America, to me as an outsider, it seems the spirit of we can do whatever. So even if you launch an app and it's successful, but it's not the next Facebook or Instagram or whatever, you know, I know it's software is different to a vehicle, but you can still make a successful product. You can have an exit or whatever, and you are part of the American success story. Like you had an idea and a dream and you built it and it worked. Car companies just seem to, because it's so capital intensive, just seem to be talked down by anyone. I mean, already in the comments, people were saying it's ugly, it's small, and Americans won't buy it. And you're like, can we give it a chance? Like, can we just see if it works? I want it to work so badly just because it's innovation and it's exciting.
I think there's so much fear with not just if it works, but if it will work sustainably, because this is such a big investment, second biggest of our lives oftentimes. So knowing that what you put your money in, there's that Tacoma, by the way, that I couldn't get my leg in.
Yeah, that's crazy.
It's absolutely crazy. Oh. Just big old seats, and this actually had room. So I think that for a lot of people, like knowing that what you put your money in, that the investment will stay, that you will be taken care of, that there'll be OTAs, that if there are any issues, there's a service center, things like that. So I think that that's a big impediment with these initial companies, is like Fisker. What happens when you buy a Fisker and then the company goes bankrupt? Like, are you just, you know, in a potential paperweight? So I think, like, unfortunately, with some things, it's like if an app goes bust, you're like, whatever, you know, I'll download something new. But if you're saddled with something that, you know, potentially could become a paperweight or like put you in danger, I think that's such a big consideration. So I think that Silicon Valley attitude, like Patrick was saying, you definitely see that in Tello. And they're actually taking the building next door, by the way, as they're expanding. Yeah, but they're not going somewhere bigger. They're just going to have like more engineers and then start manufacturing more. But I think that they're definitely spending their money in the right places in the engineering. They had a whole section that we weren't allowed to see that we obviously really wanted to see. But yeah, I think I hope for them that they succeed. I do think that since you mentioned Slate, one of the considerations is money. Like this is a little bit expensive for something so quirky, and people are having expectations of something a little less, right? And if you have Slate that's bare bones, that's potentially like, what is that, 15,000 less?
Yeah.
That's a lot of money.
But this has a rear seat.
Yeah, it has a whole bunch going for it, but you might have to convince people, which you it's hard. Yeah.
All right. That's good news. And we say good luck to them. We'll return to that in. We return to Aptera maybe once a year and we check in with them. And, you know, we're polite and we wish them the best, but they've been doing that a long time as well.
We're their biggest fan.
Speaking of which, Aptera just posted like they have like a whole bunch of job openings.
What?
They just posted, like, and the funny thing is, it's not like, you know, tire changer. Like, they're looking for like senior calibration engineer, senior design engineer, senior engineer powertrain, senior specialist for shipping and receiving, senior engineer for infotainment system, like all real senior level positions they're apparently hiring for, which, you know, on one hand is good. You say, oh, you know, they're hiring, they're expanding. But on the other hand, you wonder, well, what was going on before they're putting out all these new positions, and why do they need all these new positions now? Because they're not like Tello. Aptera has been around for a long time. We mm-hmm. know that, you know, we've been hearing about it. I remember their first go around. Dominic remembers their first go around too, way back in like 2009, 2010, somewhere around there. You know, and then the company shut down. Then the founders came back, took it over again. And, well, they went bankrupt the first time. Then they took it over again. And it's like Aptera is like, you know, it just never gets here. And as much as I love it, and I love the shape of it, and honestly think I would get one if it was available in the area, I just think it would be cool to drive. You know, they keep talking about they're going into production soon and real soon, and then they just keep delaying and delaying, and now they're hiring all these people. It looks like a mess. It's so hard to start up a car company. I've been doing this, you know, I don't know how many years now, following EVs, reporting on them and everything. I can't remember how many companies looked promising and failed, you know, and
so many
and so few actually get to the finish line. I mean, look at Fisker. I mean, they got to the finish line. They were there. They were making cars, you know, making vehicles that were nice vehicles, and they just couldn't get over that last hump. You know, the Tello, the Aptera, Slate, I don't know. I think we'll be really lucky if one of those three actually make it to market, sell vehicles, and last a couple of years. You know, I'm not even saying last forever, just a few years. So we'll see. Yeah. You know, will it be Tello? I don't know. It's a cool little vehicle, but I don't know. I don't know if any of these companies are actually going to sell cars.
Yeah, right. Absolutely. Well,
they're all innovative, though. They all have their own innovations, and that's kind of what you need to be successful, you know, and a good price point.
And Bud points out, Fisker was not making them. Magna did your job. Yeah, we know that the Magna was their contract manufacturer, Bud, and that should have even helped them even more because,
that was the good thing.
That was a good thing, you know. So, they were producing vehicles, Fisker.
Yeah.
You know, the company was producing, selling, delivering vehicles to customers, and they still couldn't seem to make it. So
they seem to do it the sensible way, Tom. They didn't say we're going to build a factory and spend $3 billion on a factory. They went to one of the best contract manufacturers, and Magna. They make the G-Class and plenty of the Jaguar I-Pace in the electric world and many more, and have done for a long time. The best in the business. And they still left Magna with a big old bill. Well, you know, Magna expanded and got the facilities to make the Fiskers, and they got stung. So everyone got hurt by Fisker. Still two near me. I still see them driving around. All sorts of stuff on the forums and the discussions and Reddit from Fisker owners who are, they're fighting.
They're fighting, exactly. They're fighting. There's new ones for sale near me.
Yeah.
There's like 10 of them in New Jersey that are for sale that are new in the 20s, like 22,000. You can get a new Fisker that the MSRP is like 67,000 or something. And I could go buy one today for like, I bet I could talk them down to like 20 grand, you know?
Wow.
But I don't want to deal with that, you know? What's that?
I was going to say, and with Tello, they are like, they very specifically said, yeah, we're definitely doing contract manufacturing. And I forget the numbers that they're talking about, but they didn't do like what some of these other startups do. It was like, yes, we're going to make this Tello truck and it's going to outsell the F-150 Lightning in 2 years. You know, they're very realistic. They're not even going like, we're going to sell 50,000 a year. I think they were talking about like 2,000, 5,000. So I think it's very realistic goals, because that always worries me when somebody's just like, yeah, we're not going to have any dealers. Nobody's going to know about us, but we're going to sell 50,000 in the first year. And you're like, that's a little crazy, because even Fisker was talking about these decent sized numbers that they were going to produce. And I'm like, that's really hard when no one even knows your company and you're not going to have the footprint to actually sell that many cars, you know? And it's like, I don't know about you, but I like when I'm like, you know, cause they were talking about like, we're going to have like a store in a mall. I'm like, I'm not just walking down, you know, like, let me go pick up, you know, some jeans. Oh, by the way, there's this company I never heard of that's selling a $50,000, $60,000 car. Maybe I'll buy one of those too. You know, it's
yeah. Yeah. Look, that was a big concern of many people in the early days of Tesla as well. Even like service and stuff, because back in the early days, I was a long way from Tesla service. And one of the reasons that you think, oh, do I get an EV? Because it's going to be before mobile service in the UK. That's going to be 2 hours on a flatbed truck if I break down at home. All those considerations, and even whether Tesla would have even made it back in the day. So many haters saying they only make money from regulatory credits and stuff like that. And if that goes away, the whole company's going bust. Thankfully, those days are behind. Thankfully, they still make one of the finest cars in the business, the brand new Tesla Model Y. It's, you know, the Model Y has been the number one selling car, a passenger car in the world for a couple of years. And I still think it's massively underrated in its new guise. I'm not seeing many of them on the road. They're having some sales issues over here in Europe. The long wheelbase is starting to sell. They've done a couple of thousand of those in China in September so far. But Tom, you recently did a big old journey in a brand new Model Y. And I mean a big old journey. What was that all about? You sent us a time lapse that was like 3 minutes long and I watched the whole thing. That was an amazing journey.
Yeah. When you say recently, really recently, I just got back to not yesterday, the day before. So I've got a friend here in Chester where I live. He's 83 years old. He happens to just go to the same coffee shop that I go in the morning. He sits there. Just say hi to him. I mean, I've never spent a lot of time with him. Like, you know, we don't go out for dinner or anything. I just know him from the coffee shop. Super nice guy. Retired military, retired fireman. He actually got injured on the job really badly years ago. I mean, he was a fireman in the 60s and 70s in New York City. Wow. When it was like the Wild West. It was like, you know, crazy. Yep. And he worked in the busiest firehouse in the world by number of fires. They rank firehouses, like how many fires they get. You know, his firehouse responded to more fires than any firehouse in the world while he was on the thing. It was like in the Bronx, New York, like in a terrible area where, you know, people like at the time in the 60s and 70s, slumlords would light their buildings on fire so they can get rid of all their tenants and rebuild it and then have it like nicer apartments. I mean, that was just one of the things. But anyway, he's starting to have a little difficulty with his vision. He can still see fine. He can still drive. But hearing us talk about Teslas and self-driving and everything, he thought it would be great if he could get assistance where the vehicle would help him driving around town and everything. He doesn't drive far anymore, but he loved the idea of having this FSD. So we decided he was going to get one. And I told him, well, if you're going to get one, you really need to get it before the end of September because you're going to save a lot of money. So he decided to do it. The problem is he has a house in Florida and one in New Jersey. He lives in Florida like 7 months out of the year, in New Jersey, 5 months, according to the weather, right? But now he's in the New Jersey. He's living here in New Jersey. He goes to Florida like in November. But his cars are registered in Florida. And while I can go to a car dealership in New Jersey, buy a car and register it in Florida, like transfer my plates, you can't do that with Tesla because they have like a different type of license. They don't have dealerships. So Tesla would not allow him to buy a vehicle out of state. I mean, I called, I was on hold trying to get this straightened out. We even went to a Tesla service center here in New Jersey. They absolutely would not sell him a car if he was registering in another state. You said, you have to pick the car, buy it and pick it up in Florida. So now what are we going to do? I told him, I said, look, you pay for my airline ticket. I'll fly to Florida with you on the delivery day and I'll drive it home with you in the car. So he was he couldn't believe I even offered to do that. And I said, look, I'm not doing it just for you. I'm going to set up my cameras and I'll make a video while I'll try to, you know, get something back, and I'll set cameras up in the car. And I want to do a video FSD, like from your house in Orlando to New Jersey. I want to see how many mistakes it makes the entire way. So that's what we did. We hopped in the car. It was 1,100 miles, exactly, like 1,103 miles or something like that. And I turned on the FSD and I said, take me to, you know, my address here in New Jersey. And we left and let the car drive us the entire way. It took us about 19 hours because we did stop in South Carolina and sleep. Because we literally flew down there, picked up the vehicle, went to his house. He checked his house, make sure everything's okay, you know, because he hadn't been there in months. And then we headed back immediately, no rest. So I drove for about, I don't know, 6 hours or so the first day, slept overnight, and then drove the final 10 or 12 hours 2 days ago. And so I set up all my cameras and everything. And this is one of this view that you have here of the camera that you just watched, I have of the entire trip. I kept changing, swapping batteries and everything. So I haven't even begun to edit everything and put a video together, but I will in a couple. It's not going to happen for a few weeks because I have a lot of travel coming up the next couple weeks. But basically, it did the whole thing with only a few problems. It did the whole thing. There were never any critical errors that, like, I had to take over quick and, like, or we would have had an accident. They were all, most all of the mistakes were pulling into the charging site, into the charger. Like, for instance, one time, and this surprised me because it's Tesla supercharger, so it should know where Tesla superchargers are. And the one time there was a supercharger site, and right before it, there was a Shell gas station. Like, you know, the entrance, the driveway was 50 feet away. And as I'm looking at the nav had the right, the blue line was correct going into the Tesla supercharger, but the car made a left like 50 feet before it should and turned into the gas station. And then it kind of drove around the gas station and then just shut off. It was like, boom, I don't know where I am. Yeah, you know what I mean?
I give up.
Yeah, yeah. So the map was correct. The navigation map was correct. The car didn't follow the navigation. That was one thing. There were a couple other times where it just, one time it drove by the entrance into the parking lot of the supercharger. It decided, like, we were coming down, instead of making a left across traffic, which was legal, into the parking lot, it decided it was going to go straight down, like, turn right, turn right, turn right, turn right, and then turn right again into the parking lot, like, make like a weird circle that it didn't need to do. And I said, okay, I'll let it do that. So as we went down and made the first right, although the map showed that that was a street, the street was only like 50 feet long and there was a fence. It was closed off. It was like a street they never finished. So then it just drove up to the fence and went like, boop, and shut off. It was like, okay, I give up, you know? So that, like, mistakes like that. And then the only other time it made a mistake was it couldn't get off the highway. And I have to review the video because funny thing was, I was talking while this was happening. I turned the camera on just a few times and talked while we were doing it. And because we were getting off the exit to the supercharger, and that's when I usually set the cameras up. I said, okay, we're making another supercharger stop. Let's watch how well it pulls into the parking lot. And it got off the highway, but then it couldn't get off the exit it needed to get to the supercharger and drove by it. I mean, there was traffic and everything there. But it just drove by it. And then it had like a 10-mile loop to get back. And I'm like, I'm not doing that. Like, we're at 30% state of charge. We're going to go to the next supercharger. So I had to shut it off because it would have kept trying to make us go there. I had to shut off FSD, drive like a mile or two, turn it back on. And then it routed us to the next supercharger, which was like 70 miles away. But other than that, the driving of it, 1,100 miles, it did fantastic. I mean, it at no point did I have to grab it and take over. The only thing I will say was it pretty aggressively cut off a black Jeep Cherokee when we were coming onto the highway. Jeep's in the slow lane driving, and we're coming onto the highway, and it just goes right over. And the Jeep had a slam on his brakes, and he actually pulled up next to us like he wanted to fight us. Yeah. And I'm like, I'm sorry, you know, like I didn't even make eye contact because I don't want to engage, you know what I mean? And I'm wrong. I know I'm wrong. You know, it's not, you know, and my friend did look over to him. He's an old guy. Looked at him. He's like, yeah, Tom, that guy's not too happy with us right now. I'm sorry.
But you're like, look, I'm with an octogenarian ex-forces, ex-services, ex-firefighter. Just give us a break. You know what I mean? Like it's this dude's car. So
it was bad. We cut him off pretty badly. Not to the point where we were in a danger of hitting him, but we came like within 6 feet, something like that.
You know what I mean?
So it was way too close for comfort. I didn't like that. It should have slowed up and let him come out, or sped up and got out in front of him. But
yeah,
it drives so smoothly. Like, he kept remarking that it feels like a human is driving. Like, it wasn't, he expected it to be very, you know, like,
robotic.
You know, robotic.
Yeah.
You know, like, and
it used to be.
And it's not at all now. It's mm-hmm. It feels like a human is driving. It drove, you know, as well as I would be driving, and really amazing. 1,100 miles, and the whole time I had in the back of my mind what happened to Justin with the bearded Tesla guy. You know, and this is my friend's brand new Model Y. So I'm like, I can't hit something. You know, like mess up this guy's car. So I was like super tense the whole time, watching the road and everything to make sure there was no, you know, we didn't hit anything, you know, like, I mean, that's chilling. I don't know if you guys had a chance to watch that yet. Justin from Bearded Tesla Guy wanted to do a coast to coast California to New York, I guess, or to the East Coast. I don't know where his ending point was.
San Diego to West Coast, East Coast. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. FSD, and show how great FSD was. He was like 50 miles in, like, it was like less than an hour, and the car just drove into this giant metal block that was like fell off a trailer or something and really messed up his vehicle. So I had that in the back of my mind the whole drive. So it wasn't a relaxing drive.
They totally like the car left.
Oh my God. Yeah. I mean, it,
but he could have avoided that. Yeah. But he really wanted the FSD to do the thing. Right. But the FSD couldn't see it. And then
that's the thing, Dom. And that's where, you know, and Justin's a great guy. I've talked to him privately and everything, not about this, but about other things and so forth. But, you know, he is a true, you know, Teslarati, you know what I mean? And you know, I think he just put too much, you know, confidence, too much faith in the vehicle. I would not have let that happen. I would have taken over. I wasn't going to, you know, hurt the vehicle at the expense of having a video showing how great the FSD was. That said, I didn't have to intervene at all. But there were no big chunks of metal in the roadway on my drive home.
Wow.
So I hope he gets his vehicle fixed, you know, and not too expensive.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm just having a look. I hadn't seen it, but I'm having a look now. And, well, he won't pay for the damage on his YouTube views by the look of it, but they're reasonable. So, yeah, 176,000 views. That's a little bit of money. Won't buy a new car, but, I need to follow that channel, don't I? So, I'll catch up on
that. If you do have FSD, please, they say supervised for a reason. I mean, it's crazy, but it lulls you into the sense of security. I mean, hell, I just drove 1,100 miles and I didn't have to input other than pulling it into the supercharger stalls. The freaking thing drove 1,100 miles by itself. You know, I didn't have to touch the steering wheel, the brake, the gas. So I understand why you get lulled into this sense of security and saying, oh, it can handle it. And it can. But there's things it just can't do. Like, and this is a perfect example of it. It was looking at thing and wondering it. Is it like a plastic bag on the road? I'm sure it saw, the vehicle saw there was something in its path.
Right.
Is it a shadow? You know, when, and I was explaining this to my friend as we're driving, and as you can see, there's shadows in the roads of different things. And I'm like, see, how can the car know what that is? I can barely make out. Is that a rock? Is it a shadow? Is it something that'll give way, like a, you know, paper or something, you know, a piece of styrofoam, something that won't matter if we hit. You know, so, you know, that last, like, I don't even know what you call it, 0.1% is going to be, I don't know how long it's going to take Tesla to actually have that coded in so that it'll be able to figure that stuff out.
You know, Musk calls it
when will it be unsupervised?
Yeah, well, that's what Musk calls the March of Nines. So 99.999, it goes on. And that's the difference between the Mercedes system, where Mercedes is highway and on certain roads, level three, which is hands off, eyes off. Mercedes-Benz takes liability for what happened. So, you know, sensors on the car, microphones, they're listening for sirens and things like that. It's a proper level three system, but it's not equivalent to what Tesla have, which is it'll take you anywhere, but you've got to be ready to take over. It's very much in a certain set of roads, but you have it in the US, you have it in Europe as well. And what was out this week? I think it was the Mercedes-Benz CLA began Chinese production, long wheelbase for China, but a great car, CLA, great car. But Mercedes-Benz said it comes with the latest level two plus plus system. And like, you can add as many pluses as you want. It's level two, my friends. Like, there's no such thing as level two plus plus. It's level two, and you have to be ready to take over, or it's level three, and the car company takes on liability, and it's hands off, eyes off. And then after that, you start to get into all sorts of, you know, levels of autonomy. But look, a lot of the Chinese cars are now coming with LiDAR at about the $20,000 equivalent price point. And so LiDAR has come down from when people will remember Mr. Musk hasn't really talked about LiDAR. I don't think so lately. But back in the day, would be like, we can do this vision only. LiDAR isn't needed and what have you. And the Chinese car makers will say, look, it no longer costs thousands of dollars per sensor. Now it's very high resolution and very, very low cost. So why wouldn't we have LiDAR? Because it can see what the human eye can't see. Tesla's backed themselves into a corner. Look, if they went with more sensors, I think we'd all get over it. Life's too short, but you do get the feeling they're going to want to try and do this with just vision only. But it's that, as Tom says, it's that last bit, isn't it?
Yeah. Will it just keep getting better, but never be, you know, will FSD never get to true level three and four? Yeah. Will it be accepted as, well, this is good enough? You know, it'll do 99.99999% of everything, but you always have to pay attention and get be ready to take over. You know, I don't know. I don't see how it can get over that last, you know, 0.001% of use cases.
Just really quickly to your point of the Chinese manufacturers, that's except for Xiaopeng, which is also vision only systems.
And they didn't used to be.
No, they've gone back.
They had a full suite of sensors, radar, LiDAR, everything. They recently decided that they're going to go at it with vision. And the interesting thing about that, I interviewed their chief technology officer, Brian Gu, two or three times. This was 5-6 years ago. Xpeng used to fly me over to China frequently, and I was reporting on them back in before COVID or right in the beginning of COVID. And I interviewed him a couple times about this, and I specifically asked him, this was, I think, in 2019, can Tesla get to full self-drive? Can they get to full autonomy on vision only? Because, you know, he was talking about how good his system is. They have, you know, 7 radars and 8 LiDARs and 16 cameras and everything, you know. And I fully expected him to say, no, you could never get to full autonomy on vision only. And he said, yes, they will. He said, it is possible. It just takes a lot more work, and we've decided to go the route of having the full suite of sensors. So that was a tell back in 2019. I should pull up that interview that I had with him. Back then, Dom, he said, you can get there with vision only. His answer was, it's just going to take a lot more work.
Yeah.
So he had that in his mind back then, I guess. And then last year or this year or last year, they decided they're dropping their sensors and they're going with vision only.
Yeah.
Should be interesting to watch play out, see how that works for them. Yeah.
But overall, you know, to put a bow on my trip from Florida to New Jersey, it was amazing to sit there and be driven 1,100 miles without having to do, you know, almost zero input. You know, I mean, really just plugging the vehicle in and there were some challenging moments where we were getting cut off, where, you know, trucks, there was one point where there's one truck, I don't know if the guy was sleep deprived or drunk or whatever, but he was swerving like crazy. And my friend was like, watch out for that truck. And we were watching, and as we approached it, the Tesla scooted over, and actually the my left tires were on like the line, because it realized to my right, there's something's going on over here. That's not cool. And it like wanted to get around the vehicle, and it accelerated to get around the truck and get in front of it. because it could, it noticed that it was not driving properly. So,
yeah.
And that was impressive that it recognized there was a problem. So let me get over to the left and let me speed up to get around this problem.
That's one of the things that is coming out in Blue Cruise, or has come out in Blue Cruise 1.4 for the F-150 Lightning. Patrick, I don't know if you, I know you're not officially the Mackie vlog anymore, but I'm sure you keep up with all things Ford. Patrick, yeah, Blue Cruise 1.4, that is, I don't know the details of that, but one of the things of it is it moves differently around trucks. It gives a bit more room.
Scooches over in with the Mach-E on Blue Cruise 1.3 and above, it scooches over as well. And it's such a small detail, and it's hard to sort of like market it. It's like, yeah, we move over big trucks because it's like everybody's interested in lane changes and turns and all of that stuff. But it makes a huge difference because we would have Blue Cruise on a lot and lives, you know, just riding there, and that big truck is like right there next to her, and you can see her sort of like, oh God. But now when the car scooches over like a foot and a half, it just feels way more comfortable. So it's a minor thing. And listening to Tom, I'm like, I appreciate that Tom did this whole drive, because it's always hard watching a lot of the videos. There we go.
Still me. Sorry. Dom, what are you doing?
That was me.
There we go. Thanks, Dom.
But it's really hard watching some of these videos when you know it's like a Tesla influencer that also is like, here, use my referral code, because you don't know what they're editing. I love having it from people that I trust, and I 110% trust Tom. So I'm glad to see it coming from somebody like him. But it's always like one of these things, and I try to explain to people like this weird thing that I all say is like, Blue Cruise does way less, and it applies to Blue Cruise, Super Cruise, Highway Drive Assist, does way less than FSD Supervise, but it's safer. FSD Supervise is way better technology-wise, but it's more dangerous. And they're like, what do you mean? That doesn't make any sense. And I was like, I can tell you, like, all of these systems, I know what it's going to do, and I'm making the decisions for it for the most part. But I can sort of see, it's like, oh, we're coming up, it's going to cancel on me, or it's going to like want me to take over. I can predict that. And that's easy for a human. This is on me. That's easy for a human to do. With FSD, it's sort of like, it handles so many things so well. You get into that complacency of like, it's going to handle this. Or if it starts deviating, you're like, okay, it knows what it's doing. And then all of a sudden you're like, oh crap, it actually doesn't. So, and I know it's getting better and better all the time. And that's actually part of the dangerous part, because like, if I tell you like, hey, you're going to drive in this car and it's going to make a mistake within the next 30 minutes, you're like, cool, I got it. I'm going to pay attention. But if you do like Tom and like, I'm going to drive 19 hours straight and it's going to make three mistakes sometimes in that 19 hours, that's really hard for a human. So it's not really FSD is dangerous. It's us as humans are really bad at supervising things. So it's amazing technology. I'll let the experts weigh in on, you know, whether they need to add LiDAR or not. If I knew the right answer, I would like heavily invest in LiDAR or heavily invest in non-LiDAR, but I don't know the right answer. And I think it may be, it's just like some companies are going to stick with LiDAR and some aren't. And it's just the way things are going to play out. But I think we're still several years out from truly unsupervised FSD or any ADAS.
Yeah. And you know what? That's fine. Yeah, I think you've hit the nail on the head, is that so many people who are anti either the CEO or the company, whatever, will always go, but he said it will do this. And they've got a point, because it's a massive case of overpromising and under-delivering. And then Tesla fans get upset and they say, what do you mean it under-delivers? It's incredible. And both those things are true. We were told it would, in 2018 or whenever it was, it'll drive itself across the country, which it can't do. But it's also really good. So, you know, hey, both sides can carry on fighting and we'll just stay here and do our thing. Autonomy stuff to talk about on the podcast before we go, actually. Software stuff, really. So Volvo are updating the EX90. And that is getting quite a quick hardware refresh. We'll get onto that in a moment. But Tom, let's talk about Rivian first of all, Tom, before we go today, because well, actually, there was a single sourced report came out from Germany, Manager Magazine, which said all is not healthy with the Rivian Volkswagen partnership. You know, that's famously got co-CEOs of that joint venture, and so this single report from a single source, like I say, said that things are bumpy at that joint venture because Volkswagen have effectively said, oh, we need to do some more combustion vehicles for a little bit longer. And Rivian have effectively said, we got no interest in rewriting all of our software for combustion and mini explosions and liters of fuel per hour or whatever. And there's tension and it's not going well. But also, you know, co-CEOs, too many chefs. I can say that because I'm an idiot podcaster. And probably just offend loads of people saying that. But, you know, maybe you have one boss. One of those co-CEOs is been on this podcast before, an incredible engineer, Wassim Ben Said, Rivian's chief software officer as well. So he wears two hats. And Tom, this was not the topic that you got into on your video, but you were talking about the Rivian software update, which also featured an interview with Mr. Ben Said, the chief software officer. So, Tom, very quickly, what makes this Rivian update a really big deal? Apart from all the Volkswagen stuff, anything that Rivian owners or even maybe people looking at those vehicles should know about?
So, first of all, it depends if you have a Gen 1 or a Gen 2 vehicle, because the different generation vehicles got different improvements. The biggest difference, well, they all have both versions got a bunch of bug fixes and performance improvements like faster touchscreen and you know, faster response and navigation stability, better commands that you can send to the vehicle while the vehicle is asleep. The vehicle goes asleep to conserve energy. In the past, it was difficult sometimes to send it commands. They improved some things like that. There's enhanced audio settings. The big thing that both vehicle gets is smart charging scheduling. And, you know, Rivian talked about how I think it was 80-something percent of their customers charging, maybe it was 75%, I forget, somewhere around there. It's in my video, of their customers charging gets done at home. And they have that data because they can see where your vehicle's charging and so forth. But not a high percentage of their customers are using time of use plans to save money. So, I mean, anybody can do this themselves. They can contact their utility, find out what time of use plans are available, sign up, then schedule the car or the charging equipment to only charge your vehicle during that certain window where you could save money. And in some instances, it could be significant. All the different utilities across the country have different rates and different time of use plans. So I can't say, oh, you'll save 20%, because it depends on where you live. Some people will save a lot, can save 50% of their electric vehicle charging. It could be hundreds of dollars per year, if not close to $1,000 per year, if you drive a lot. So you could have always done this by yourself, but Rivian's making it easier by basically, if you sign up for this plan, like all you'd have to do is sign up at your utility and say, yeah, I want a time of use plan and check that. And then you turn on this new smart charging scheduling, and the vehicle will, based on your specific utility, you know, it knows your zip code where you live and what utility is providing you electricity. It will look at the utility's plans and schedule your vehicle's charging to optimize your cost savings. Because some time of use plans have different tiers during different times of the day. It's not just one tier like midnight to 6 a.m. They'll have different rates during different times of day. And so the vehicle will figure it all out for you and plan your charging accordingly. That's pretty good. And that was really what I really wanted to talk to Wassim about, because that was the biggest, let's say, new thing that was done in all the vehicles. Gen 1 and Gen 2 Rivians get this. But then Gen 2 vehicles also get a new feature in the enhanced auto assist. It's called Co-Steer. And that's not completely different from what we were just recently talking about. You're driving down the highway, and then there's a big vehicle on your right or your left, or there's you're in a construction zone, and there's a cement barrier that's right on top of your lane, and you just feel uncomfortable because the highway assist, like the other 8S's, typically try to drive you right down the middle of your lane. And that could get you a little bit close if a truck is coming towards you. And Patrick just talked about this, but Blue Cruise does this. Blue Cruise does this automatically. It'll scoot you over a little bit away from a fast move or a big vehicle or something like that. But what the new Co-Steer lets you do with the Rivian is you can take the wheel and just scooch over a little bit in the lane if there's a truck or something that you don't like, and it won't disengage in highway assist. In the past, the Rivians, and I have an R1S, was very sensitive. If you were on highway assist driving down the lane and you turned the wheel a little bit while it was driving, you heard that the audio announcement, like the beep, that you've disengaged highway assist. And it would automatically re-engage once you like held it straight and you were in the lane. But it would quickly disengage. It felt that, okay, for whatever reason, the driver is grabbing the steering wheel, so there must be something that he wants to take over. He or she wants to take over. But with this new Co-Steer, it gives you play. As long as you remain in your lane, it will let you scooch over to the left or to the right. I think once you exit the lane, it's going to disengage. But so I think that's a good feature. To be honest with you, it would be better if it did it automatically like Blue Cruise does, where if there's something that you don't like or something's coming close to you, it automatically moves you all the way over to the other side of the lane. It doesn't do that, but it's the next best thing. It allows you to just give a couple more feet away from that big truck that's, you know, wandering close to your lane and without disengaging highway assist.
That's cool.
I think that's actually a huge improvement because there's a few of those systems, and we've tried all of the different systems every time we get in, you know, whatever EV, and there's like some construction on I-5 where the lanes are shifted over like a foot, which means like every single system wants to center me in the lane, but I'm right where the concrete joint is. So the car is sort of like hitting it and it sounds bad and it like sort of wobbles. With Blue Cruise, we can like just sort of like nudge it over some of the systems, Tesla with autopilot, like as soon as you like put too much pressure, it's like, cool, you have it. And it like throws you out. So like, I think that'd be a cool feature to have in Rivian. And again, it's one of those, it's like, it's minor, but it's a huge difference.
100%. It's good. Again, I wish it did automatically like Blue Cruise does. You know, if it senses something's coming a little close to you, let it push you over a little bit, but maybe that's the next step. I don't know. But it's good that you can do it now without disengaging, their highway assist.
And the time of use being controlled by the car, I think, is huge. And it's something that I've been saying, like, we need in cars, because a lot of people do that same thing. Like, we do this. It's like, I'll set the charger up so that it won't dispense power, or I'll set the car up, you know. But usually a lot of people are like, I'm going to buy a smart charger so I can control when my car is going to charge. And then they're like, well, let me precondition my car. And I'm like, it doesn't work because the charger is not going to dispense power because you said don't dispense power after 6 a.m. So they're literally just, you know, using their car's battery to precondition or whatever. So it's sort of like, it's like we have a smart car, we have a smart charger, we have a smart whatever. It's like, let's all just work together. And it's like the car should be able to handle that. And by the way, I just found out Colorado has a program, if you have a charge point charger, specifically with Xcel Energy, so the combo, overnight charging can be 2.8 cents per kilowatt hour. Like, it's insane.
That's true.
Like, we pay more taxes on our earth.
That's the future.
Yeah.
And, you know, we talk about the Grizzly Club, United Chargers, our sponsor here, how in Canada they'll give you the free charger and then pay you back 3 cents per kilowatt hour, however much you charge. That program is taking off in Canada right now. And Gleb, the CEO, is extremely happy at the progress, particularly after I made that video last week. He said he's getting flooded with calls. So I was talking to him about it, and he said, Tom, he goes, let's not really make too big of an announcement about it yet, but you can mention it if you want. He said it's going over so well here in Canada. I do plan on bringing it to the U.S. He said it's going to take a few months. It's a little bit more difficult in the U.S. because it's a lot more difficult because there's so many different utilities. But he said soon I will give free chargers to U.S. EV owners and pay you back part of the money that you that it cost you to charge your EV. So that's a good a good thing. We're going to be getting that here soon. But it's interesting to hear about the ChargePoint charger. And before, while we're on the news of chargers, I have bad news. Well, not really bad news, but to me, it's a little sad news. EvoCharge closed up business. And just this week. And so we have another potential NLX issue with the juice box, because the EvoCharge is a smart charger. They're going to shut their servers down at the end of this month. This month or next month. No, the end of October. So it will still work, the EvoCharge units. And it's a good unit. And I really like those guys at EvoCharge. They offered to give me free chargers to give away to my followers. And I gave one away, actually. Good group of people over there. US-based. They manufactured their chargers here in the U.S. And I really feel bad that the company's going under. But the, there's already at least one company that's going to provide the software transition. So if you do own an EvoCharge, you'll be getting an email, if you haven't already, that says, you know, hey, our servers are going to be shutting down the end of this month, but here you can direct your unit to this charging software and still have smart charging features and an app. So I just wanted to announce that. It's that's unfortunate. This is going to happen. The market's going to start thinning, particularly here in the U.S. Because of, you know, some of the changes we've had recently. You know, it was going to happen anyway. There's so many different charging companies out there. They can't all survive. And if the market slows up a little bit like we expect it to, I think some of the companies that were marginally operating right now are saying, hey, if it's bad now, wait till a year or two from now. So maybe we ought to cut our losses. So we'll see. It's unfortunate, but it is what it is. And that's business.
OCPP is what you want to have a look for when you buy your next EVSE, and that is the Open Charge Point Protocol. So it's, well, you know.
The thing is, Martin, all the chargers are technically, not all of them, but most all of them that operate now are OCPP compliant. But that doesn't mean that the company will allow you to direct the charger to another server. Like the NLX juice box was OCPP compliant, but its software was locked down to only talk to NLX servers. So they had to open it up, or you couldn't. That was the difference with what United Chargers was talking about with their chargers. They would just allow the customer to just direct it to another app if they wanted to. You can't do that with any other charging equipment. All the other companies, including EvoCharge, has to allow it to be opened up for another charging software provider, which they have. You know, they're saying, okay, we're going out of business. We will. Now, I mean, you can imagine what would happen if a company like ChargePoint, who's been in kind of financial distress for a little while, if that happens to a ChargePoint with the amount of charging equipment that they have out there. It'll be a catastrophe. And, you know, I'm not certainly not saying ChargePoint's going to go out of business, but I'm not saying it's not impossible for them to go out of business. They're not doing great. And that would be NLX times 100, you know, the problems that would create if ChargePoint were to say, you know, hey, you know, we can't make a run of this. Our servers are shutting down.
Yeah.
I hope that doesn't happen.
No, of course not. Right, we might need to. We'll change the description of the video because we might not get to all the stuff that we promised at the beginning. But there's always other weeks. There's midweek shows and stuff. But we will get, before we go, to the EX90 news. And if, you know, I know not everyone's buying a Volvo EX90, but we can talk to the larger issue of cars coming out before they're fully baked. The EX90 has had issues. One owner who spoke to Inside EVs, again, you know, one owner who's just really peed off with the company, was calling it a dumpster fire inside a train wreck. Like, she was really unhappy. But I get it. If you spent $90,000 and the car isn't ready. It's different than if you bought a Volvo EX30, which is a cheaper proposition. That also wasn't fully baked when it launched. There are issues with the EX90 with CarPlay and phone as a key issues. I'm not minimizing it, by the way, because the lady that spoke inside EV said that she would have to hold the key card next to her door. And if it's raining for 30 seconds, 60 seconds before the car would find it, that's not okay on any vehicle. A $90,000 Volvo top of the range, that's not okay for the brand. However, Volvo have heard and they're updating the existing EX90s. So when they launched the ES90 saloon, all singing, all dancing, you know, 800 volt architecture, our latest, greatest. And they just launched the EX90 on a 400 volt platform and with all the old stuff. So anyway, they obviously can't change. They won't do a buyback of the car and give you a new one. But the new Volvo EX90s are getting new hardware, new software, and the ES90s underpinning, which makes perfect sense. Existing cars, however, will get a computer hardware upgrade and a software upgrade as well. Tesla have done this in the past. Sometimes customers have paid Tesla to do that when they're a smaller company and could do that. The new hardware is the NVIDIA Drive AGX Orin-based core computer. Besides being more capable, it will hopefully allow Volvo to add more autonomy over time as well. And like I say, the new cars are physically different. I mean, the best benefit of the higher voltage will be faster charging. We don't know an official 10 to 80%. 155 miles added in 10 minutes. I'll take that. And so a peak charging rate above 250 kilowatts. That was the old one, at least. So they're adding more safety, which is very important for Volvo, of course. But offering this to existing customers, I think is a smart move to not only do any more brand damage. Owned by Megacorp Geely, at the end of the day, you know, this will be a cost, but probably a cost which is a sensible one to foot the bill on, because this is a really premium vehicle. And when your lease money is coming out every month and the car's not right, those kind of buyers are more likely to perhaps be more vocal. I don't know. I'm not sure how to not offend everybody in that, because... Like, if you're inside the EV world and you watch those early reviews, it's clear there was something not right. But as the lady in the interview says to Inside EVs, I don't care. I walked into a Volvo dealership and bought a brand new Volvo, and it's not finished yet. This is the difference. It's really interesting. Before we go, Patrick, I'd love to get your take on this. Back in the day, Tesla, and to an extent even now, could create the kind of love for the brand where I would speak to people and they would say, the car windscreen wipers never work. They only wipe when it's dry, and this broke and that, and the door thing fell off. And I go, wow, that's awful. And they go, oh no, Tesla's the best car I've ever owned. It was this crazy situation where they forgive the brand for so much. Volvo's a different beast though. I think it's smart to do this. Patrick, what's your take on that story?
You nailed it 100%. It's like somebody that's buying a Volvo isn't going like, let me buy this quirky car and I'll get an update and it'll break a couple of things and that's cool. And that's the way, like, you know, we know so many of our Tesla friends that they will complain about something and you're like, if that were a BMW or whatever, they would be like, I'm taking it back. So I think it is definitely like, it has to be, it's like, it's money well spent for Volvo to do that. But it is also like concerning industry as a whole, and we've seen some of this with like cell phones, where, you know, they'll advertise and like, this is coming out in your phone, and then it's like a year later and it still doesn't have those features. And I'm like, I'm worried as we get into software defined vehicles that we're going to have a lot of this where people are going to like, it's going to do this, and then it's like, it doesn't actually do any of those. But there will always be that marketing promise is like, oh, don't worry, it'll be an over-the-air update. Mm-hmm. And Ford has been guilty of this, like even with the Blue Cruise, like we had Blue Cruise 1.0 and it's like, we're going to get you Blue Cruise 1.3. It'll be out by the end of this year. And it literally took like another entire year. Mm-hmm. We're going like, hey, we're early adopters. It's the Mach-E. It's the first gen. We're good with that. But there are a lot of people that did buy the Mach-E that were like, this is the last Ford I'll ever buy because mm-hmm. of the delays. And how many customers did Volvo lose? And it also, and this is the other thing, you know, big industry wise, like the guy that bought, or the person that bought Volvos for years, and they're like, you know what, I'm going to try that electric one. And then they buy the electric one, and it has all these problems, and it has nothing to do with the electric powertrain, but they're like, you know what, I don't want another electric car. It had all of these problems. So Yeah, please, Volvo, do the right thing, but also please don't do this again. and you mentioned the EX30. We saw all the reviews with the quirks and the issues with, you know, it's a great car, but the software. And I always take that with a grain of salt, because like we'll get into like an ID4 and I'm like, eh, the software is not great, but it's not bad. EX30 software is horrible. And I'm like, how did this, like some of this stuff, like with the EX30, you know, those on ramps, like where you it's the clover leaf where you got to like circle around. So I'm like, I'm doing that in the EX30 and I'm like watching the road of where I'm going because I'm turning. So I'm like looking over there and the center screen is like warning me of like, hey, pay attention to the road. I'm like, I'm looking at the road, but first of all, why are you alerting me on this screen over here in this like little tiny font to look at the road when that's not on the road? It's horrible software.
Right. So yeah, and it's not just limited to like this one customer. Like the Volvo EX30, like Facebook groups or different forums, is a lot of complaints about the EX90. So hopefully, yeah, they get this really straightened out with this 26 model year and just avoid these kind of situations, because this is not. I mean, it's a premium brand, and premium brand does not mean, you know, service visits and stuff that doesn't work, like standing out in the rain for a minute. Because you're using the key card, because your phone is a key doesn't work, and also your what's the other system they have? Phone is a key. Oh, the key fob. Her key fob only works like 10% of the time. Like a key fob, that shouldn't be hard. That should work, right?
Yeah. Brilliant.
Well, I finally got walk away lock on my Lightning yesterday after
nice.
More than 3 years of waiting. it would unlock when I would approach, but it wouldn't lock when you walked away. I'm like, how do they give you unlock but then not walk away lock? You know, like you would think that feature would come. You'd either have both or you'd have neither.
Yeah. You know?
But I got walk away lock like 2.5 years ago. And you know, with the promise of, unlock, walk yeah. up to unlock. But like 2.5 years ago with the promise of, yeah, walk away lock's coming soon. And finally got it in this update that we just got with the Blue Cruise improvements too. So, and I used it yesterday. It worked. I was like, finally, right. You know.
We know a few people that have a Mach-E and a Lightning, and the Mach-E had it from day one. Yeah. But the Lightning never had it. So they're like, they forget it. That it doesn't work on their Lightning, and they would walk away and they'd come back like, oh my God, I forgot to actually hit the lock
the whole time. Yeah. I mean, like I said, just for that purpose of, you know, not needing to bring a key or press buttons to unlock and everything, the lock and unlock system should always be packaged together. It shouldn't give you one and not the other, because it could also lead to you making mistakes and forgetting about it. Like if you're used to just walking up to the vehicle and getting into it, you would be natural that you'd just walk away from it, you know, without doing anything. So that was weird. But, and I was a real vocal, I don't know what you want to say, but, you know, not proponent or opponent, but I'd been giving Ford a lot of,
grief
issues with grief with that. Yeah. Every time I talk to them, when we talk about doing like some type of pressing, whatever, I'm like, and when am I getting walk away lock? Like, yeah, Tom, we heard you. Don't worry.
Yeah.
We finally got it yesterday.
Welcome to 2020.
When manufacturers say software-defined vehicle and they brag about it, it's like it cuts both ways. It's like you have bad software is defining your vehicle.
That's the fascinating thing. Let's not go backwards for the sake of, you know, these are solved. Unlocking a car and not standing in the rain for a minute with a key card against your Volvo 100 grand car, that's a solved problem. A bit like door handles, which China has got involved with this week. China opened or started to give official guidance on when that will need to be resolved for cars sold. I think 2026 they're aiming for. So they can't have retractable door handles and you can't have the invisible door handles. It has to be a handle. because as Tesla responded very quickly, the chief designer, Franz von Holzhausen, who speaks often, he's been there so long. You know, obviously the CEO makes a lot of comments, but he is allowed to talk on behalf of the company. Within like 4 days of the NHTSA investigation, he said, yep, we're redesigning it. It's an easy job. Like all the mechanism is kind of together in the door. But China wasn't so much about the specific Tesla issue of the battery voltage drop and you can't get in your car. It was a case of, it's a stupid idea, because if you've got no power, emergency responders can't get in. So China central government put out a bunch of requirements this week, which was all to do with all the doors must have handles. They put crash testing in there as well. It's very specific about if the vehicle is damaged, you must be able to open the door from the outside. If the battery goes, you must be able to open the door mechanically. And how crazy that in 2025, it takes China to be like, don't be stupid, put a handle on the thing, because it's a solved problem. But hey.
I love it so much, just as a by the way, as someone with dexterity issues, I can only use these two fingers on my hand. So some of the more like creative or complicated door handles, it's like, what are you doing? A door handle is so simple that normally you can use one finger to do it, especially with like powered open. So complicating this is just really unnecessary and then inaccessible. So I'm delighted right now.
And there's nothing to stop them doing. Like a lot of cars have a thing where they have a handle or a, it hasn't got to be a huge sticky outy thing for aero. But as you say, in your situation, Liv, you could put your fingers maybe against the underside of it and it would, that just that pressure is enough to unlock a car sometimes. And then you just pull it. But that doesn't have to be a self-disappearing door handle thing that can break. We should probably end there. We probably should call it a day. We're late anyway and over our time. Guys, thank you so much. What's next in store for you guys and the channel? You've rebranded it so amazingly well. You've got your branded clothing and everything. It looks so good. But what's next?
We're going to Tennessee and New York. We may have some other things, but I want to mention New York because we're going to Schenectady for their Drive Electric Month event. It's like the largest in the country. Please come join us if you're in the New York area, Albany area. If you're not, go to driveelectricmonth.org. There's like 100 events going on all month. And I think their month is like mid-September to mid-October that they're doing this.
12th.
So there's just a lot of cool events. You get to go hang out, talk with other EV people, but more importantly, show off your EV to those people that are like, eh, I think I'll stick with the hybrid. And you're like, no, you shouldn't. Come on over to the electric side.
But if you are coming, be sure to register on Drive Electric Month. I'm going to heckle Tom when we're done and see if we can convince him to come. But you probably
I think he's traveling around somewhere. The
country, so, yeah.
What date? Is it in the next 3 weeks? When is
it? Yeah.
October 5th. Probably not going to be anywhere near here, so. It's funny. You know what I love when I go to those events, which I go to a lot of those events. You know when how you register? It also asks you to write how many electric miles you've driven.
Yeah.
So I've over 500,000 now electric miles driven. So whenever I register for those events, it always shows you the total driven by everybody registered. And then I register and add it. And you see it like doubles and stuff. Like, I know the organizer must be like, what happened to the miles? You know, yeah. But I probably can't. I probably can't make it unless it's like one day in between trips or whatever. Yeah. But I always go to whatever shows that I can make.
What you got going on next, Tom?
I'm going to Bogota, Colombia on Monday.
I mean, that sounds. Is that for a car thing?
No, it's not for a car.
Oh.
Good.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Good. Amazing. Yeah,
I'm going to Bogota, and then I might hop on a small plane and go down to Cartagena. We'll see. But
nice.
Whoa, yeah. Nice.
You see, you've since Gleb took you up, you've got the bug now for small planes. I'm surprised.
Well, I've driven in many small planes, and I'm usually fine with that.
So
we'll see. And it won't be that small of a plane, you know.
No.
Yeah, it's in any event, this is actually a personal thing that I'm going down there for. But then I have to fly down to Reston for Electrify America for a day, and then I'm flying down to North Carolina with Ayana for a day, and then I'm going to South Africa the following week. So I have like lots of flights in the next, I mean, and I'm already into this. It started in the end of September mid-September through mid-October or beginning of September through mid-October. It's incredible, my schedule. It's insane. Like I have like 9 flights. I'm visiting 4 countries and like 14 US states. So it's a tough run that I'm in right now. And that's honestly, awesome. Guys, I can't do this anymore. It's beating the shit out of me. You know, 10 years ago, I could travel and not get sleep or whatever. Now I'm in different time zones. I'm flying places and then having like a driving event where I got to get up at 5 in the morning to get out and beat traffic. And I'm already beat. I'm run down and beat, and I'm only halfway through it. But I will relax down in Colombia for a little bit, so that'll be a good time. And unfortunately, I got to tell you guys, I haven't told you guys, I'm going to miss a couple of the shows with this in the next month traveling. I'll give you guys the schedule. I don't even know which ones it is. I think I'm here next week, then not here, then here, then not here. So, but I'll let you guys know.
Well, I gotta know about South Africa, though. If you don't know, I'm from South Africa.
I know, yes.
Cape Town license plate right there that I might have acquired before I left.
Well, that's where I'm going, Cape Town. So,
for a car thing?
Amazing.
No, that's not for a car thing either.
Okay. It's for fun?
What's that?
It's for fun?
It's not for a car thing. Yeah, it's kind
of
for fun.
I love it. Mystery continues.
National man of mystery. He's got a mission of some kind.
I know. Yeah. Well, a little bit of business going on around the world for Tom, but we won't ask too many questions and he won't have to give us too many answers. So let's hope he does come back on the podcast and isn't... and he comes back. So let's call it a day there.
You're going to say incarcerated, weren't you?
No, I wasn't going to say incarcerated. I was watching the return of Kimmel this week, where De Niro took on the role of the role. Yeah, it was mocking the FCC of things, and I was smiling because we do poke Tom sometimes for his being a man of mystery and stuff like that. But anyway. He's channeling his inner De Niro. I love it. So, all right, that's the podcast. Thank you so much for listening, for watching, for subscribing, for taking part in the comments, because we can't do this without you. We absolutely love it when we see you joining in. Big audience again this week. So thank you so much for joining us. And yeah, please share the podcast as well. If there's somebody who, you know, is into EVs, wants to learn a little bit more, get involved every week, ping them and send this on and say, hey, here's a podcast. Always helps grow the show and spread the word. You know the deal with hitting subscribe and the like button and all that kind of stuff. It really helps us grow the podcast. Thank you very much for joining us, and we will see you all again very soon. Hey, Dom, say ciao.
Ciao.